is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. The question of whether to forgive student loans and how much should be forgiven has taken up a lot of air among Democrats lately. While some continue to call for President Biden to forgive up to $50,000 of federal student loans, Biden has made his stance clear last week during a CNN town hall.
I'm prepared to write off the $10,000 debt, but not 50.
We asked you what you thought of Biden's $10,000 proposal. Here's what one of you had to say.
I'm Nathaniel calling from Boise, Idaho. I'm a first-generation college graduate. I am now 10 years post-graduation, and $10,000 is barely a third of my interest that I owe. I am in Idaho because I lost everything, and that's mostly because I couldn't save any money because of student loans. So we do need full forgiveness. Almost everyone I know has at least $50,000 in debt. It's crippling us and crippling an entire generation.
Nathaniel, thanks for leaving us that voicemail. So what does the future of student loan forgiveness look like? Joining us now to talk about this is Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley. She's a Democratic U.S. representative for Massachusetts' 7th Congressional District. That includes northern Boston, most of Cambridge, and some of Milton. Congresswoman, it's great to have you.
Good to be with you.
So you're one of the Democrats pushing for President Biden to forgive up to $50,000 in student loan debt, something he said pretty firmly he's not going to do. How do you plan to make this happen without his support? Is it possible?
Well, look, I disagree with the president's comments. And after engaging with the White House directly on this, I was encouraged to see the press secretary walk back his comments from the podium. President Biden has the authority to cancel student debt that was given to him by Congress through the Higher Education Act. And our resolution that I've introduced with Senators Warren, Schumer, Representative Omar, and others lays out exactly how he can do it. Further, there were misleading narratives about who is burdened by student debt that were harmful and perpetuated in that town hall. The reality is millions of Black, Latino, and low-income student loan borrowers who have borne the disproportionate brunt of this crisis and predictably are also the same communities that have been hardest hit by this pandemic are burdened by what is a nearly $2 trillion crisis. So canceling $50,000 in student loan debt would completely wipe away the debt of 80% of our lowest income households, and it would benefit 40% of borrowers who do not have a college degree.
Well, we should mention here that Black college graduates owe an average of $25,000 more in student loan debt than white college graduates. American Indian and Alaska Native student borrowers owe the highest monthly payments. How much support is there for forgiving up to $50,000 among your Democratic colleagues?
I think, you know, momentum has been growing and we have the support of some 350 grassroots organizations. But the point is that through the power of executive action, the stroke of a pen, President Biden can mitigate this hurt. It's important to realize here that the bills have not stopped coming and the federal response has failed to meet the scale and scope of this crisis. So our aid has failed to meet the scale and scope of this crisis. And the bills have not stopped coming. Our aid has stopped, but the bills have not stopped coming. Families negotiating between rent and groceries. We should be eliminating burden. We should be eliminating debt. And this is not just a millennial and Gen Z issue. In fact, the fastest growing population of those who owe student debt are 50 plus. I have constituents in my district, 70 plus years old, 76 years old, one constituent that comes to mind, who's still paying on student loans. Massachusetts, a higher education mecca, I have educators who have lost their licensure to teach because they have defaulted on loans, loans that they incurred to be educators. And this is not only an economic justice issue, this is not only an intergenerational issue, it is a racial justice issue because, to your point, Black women have more student debt than anyone else.
We had lots of people who wanted to add their voices to this conversation, and we received this voicemail from someone who's happy with $10,000 in forgiveness.
Hi, this is Harold calling from Carson City, Nevada. $10,000 in loan forgiveness would be very beneficial for me. As we get higher in the amount of loan forgiveness, it just starts to help people who are high earners, people like doctors or lawyers, especially if we look at what's happening during this pandemic. I think more direct payments to the American people would be much more beneficial.
Harold, thanks for leaving us that message. Congresswoman, to Harold's point, a number of economists have argued that $10,000 would actually help those who need it most. The average federal student loan debt is around $36,000. What's your response to this?
Okay, well first, again, that is a misleading narrative. And who's left out of that are the millions who have been victimized by for-profit colleges with predatory lending and deceptive business practices. Again, this is a racial justice issue as well. And those critiques largely ignore the flaws in systemic racism that do persist in our current profit-based higher education system. I'm looking at the majority of people who hold student debt, and these are low-income folks, Black and brown folks, who have no choice but to take on this debt, yet are less likely to reap the economic benefits. Student debt is disproportionately held by people of color, and its cancellation would target their families and their communities. That there's nothing regressive about that. And there are millions that are barely getting by with their student loan payments. People are paying student loan payments that are the equivalent of a mortgage. They shouldn't be locked out of relief because they just passed some arbitrary income cap. We have to recognize the urgency of this moment and advance policies that meet the scale and scope of the pain that folks are feeling. And let me just get back to the racial justice component one more time, because the Biden-Harris administration has expressed a desire to go big. They've also expressed a desire to root out and to actively dismantle systemic and structural racism. Black students, 85% of them, have no choice but to borrow in order to pursue higher education because of discriminatory policies like redlining, to name a few, which have obstructed our families' abilities to build generational wealth. And then Black student borrowers are five times more likely to default on those loans than their white counterparts.
We're talking about student loan forgiveness with Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley. She's a Democratic U.S. representative for Massachusetts' 7th Congressional District. Congresswoman, forgiving student loans would be costly. To forgive the $50,000 would cost around $640 billion. We've already spent trillions of dollars towards COVID stimulus packages in the last year. There's another package on the way. How are you justifying the cost?
Because I'm centering people. I'm centering people who are struggling under a tsunami of hurt. I'm centering those who have been most impacted. And we're always met with the critiques of how we pay for it, how can we best target relief whenever we're centering the people and pushing for bold policies. Just last year, Congress passed a $750 billion funding bill, which bankrolled the Pentagon and defense contractors, all while arguing at the same time that direct cash payments in the form of survival checks are too expensive in the midst of a public health pandemic. So we can't buy into this false scarcity narrative because the money is there. And we won't allow these policy decisions to be made at the expense of our communities any longer.
When it comes to the question of student loan forgiveness, some argue that it does nothing to actually address the root problem, which is that college is just too expensive. Do you have a plan to tackle the issue of college affordability and not just wipe away debt once it's accrued?
Again, President Biden has the authority to cancel student debt by executive action, and he should do that. But we also, in addition to that, in recognizing that people aren't borrowing out of convenience, they're borrowing out of need and necessity because of the skyrocketing costs of college, which has made a degree more expensive than ever before. So that's why student debt cancellation can't be the end-all be-all. It must also be married with those robust investments in financial aid in our HBCUs and investments that will make tuition-free college a reality.
If President Biden doesn't come around on forgiving up to $50,000 of student loan debt, will you support a plan to forgive $10,000? Is that enough, or will you continue to push?
Look, I'm not conceding any ground here. Our resolution has a record level of support across both chambers of Congress. We were joined by over 325 grassroots organizations in calling on the president to cancel student debt by executive action. The coalition behind student debt cancellation, which elected the Biden-Harris administration, is growing and momentum is building. And so we're just going to keep applying pressure both internally and externally. And I'm confident that the people who call this country home are with us.
And in the face of so many other challenging priorities right now, how do you press the president on this issue and get his support for this $50,000 forgiveness plan?
Sure. Well, I've been in, you know, frequent and ongoing communication with the Biden-Harris administration about everything from cabinet to sub-cabinet appointees to policy priorities, and that continues. You know, when you are lawmaking, and I'm relatively new to Congress, but not to lawmaking. You know, I've been doing this work for a very long time. We don't have the luxury of being sequential or binary. We have to work on all of it. People aren't living in, you know, single issue boxes. They're living in nuance and intersectionality and complexity. And they're living under a great deal of hurt right now because of this pandemic, the economic hardship it has wrought, and because of systemic and structural racism. So canceling student debt by executive action will immediately mitigate hurt for many people. Again, 80% of our lowest income households.
That's Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley. She's a Democratic U.S. representative for Massachusetts' 7th Congressional District. Congresswoman, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
We'll continue our conversation about the question of student loan forgiveness in a moment. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A. Back now to our conversation about student loan forgiveness. Let's bring two new voices in. Annie Lowry is a staff writer at The Atlantic. She writes about economic policy. Annie, it's great to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Danielle Douglas Gabriel. She's a reporter for The Washington Post covering the economics of education. Danielle, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
We also want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on student loan forgiveness? If you're a student loan borrower, do you want your loans to be forgiven, or would you rather see something else done? You can comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or send us an email at 1A@WAMU.org. Annie, we just heard from Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley. Was there anything there that stuck out to you?
Yeah, you know, I think that this is an issue where a lot of our intuition about who would benefit gets a bit scrambled because as a general point, folks who have gone to or especially have graduated from college have really been winners in this kind of winner-take-all economy. Yet, when you sort of dig down into the numbers and you look at who's taking out a lot of student loan debt, this is a cohort of people who perhaps haven't advanced as much as they would have thought that they would, and there's a lot of economic distress there. And so I think it's a really interesting and complicated. It's very much not a simple topic to kind of unravel who would benefit and in what ways.
Well, and it's important to highlight the fact that having student loan debt doesn't necessarily mean you have a college degree.
Of course not. Many, many, many people go to school but don't finish and therefore don't get the wage benefits of having that degree.
Danielle, at this point, the debate among Democrats is not about whether to forgive student loans, but how much to forgive. Break down this debate between forgiving $50,000 and $10,000 and what these numbers effectively mean for borrowers.
So the $50,000 debate, which actually has been going on since almost a year at this stage, thinking about debt relief as an economic benefit here, the $50,000 would cover a vast majority of borrowers, many of whom are in distress, meaning that they're delinquent or in default on their loans prior to the payment pause that was instituted by the Trump administration last year. Now, the $10,000, that would cover the debts of the vast majority of folks who are in default, but not really creep into the growing debt balances held by people who haven't graduated, as well as folks who are pursuing advanced degrees. So that has been a bit of a stumbling block here in terms of what amount would make the most sense. I do get the sense that there is greater sense of kind of folks feeling that 10,000 would be a fairer number, even though 50,000 would certainly get at a larger percentage of folks with debt.
Now, Annie, Biden says he doesn't think he has the authority to forgive up to $50,000. What do we know about what he is or isn't allowed to do when it comes to student loan forgiveness?
So I would note that we're in somewhat uncharted territory here because this kind of loan forgiveness is not something that we've seen on a massive scale before. However, many legal scholars believe that President Biden absolutely has the unilateral executive authority to cancel student loan debt that's held by the government. So it would take an act of Congress to cancel or forgive private student loan debt. And again, I would just note that there are some caveats here, but it seems likely that if it's that public student loan debt that's issued by the government, that they would be able to simply forgive it and that Biden would not need Congress's help to do it.
Daniel, let's step back from the political debate for a second. Put the problem of student loan debt into context for us. How big of a problem is this debt in this country?
So we're talking nearly 45 million Americans who have student debt. I think, again, one of the important stats is the 40% that do not have college degrees but have that debt, which means they didn't get the economic benefit of pursuing school. The reason why we're hitting the $1.6 trillion level is a couple of things. One, there's been a significant increase in the number of people going to college since the Great Recession. And the cost of college has skyrocketed at a time when the Pell Grant, purchasing power of the Pell Grant, which was the primary vehicle for the federal government to fund lower income students' ability to pay for college, it has lost its purchasing power, barely covering a quarter of the cost. And so if you have more people going in, you have a lot more lower income people going in, they have a financial need that is not being supported by the state or the federal government, then they are left to borrow. And as a result, without any kind of price caps, controls, or any of that, and this consistent messaging of the importance of a college education, you're going to see debt levels continue to rise.
Well, we received this voicemail from Susan in Florida.
I do not believe that there should be any student loan forgiveness by the federal government. I worked as a waitress. My husband worked in a steel mill. And we paid our own way. And I believe that the student loan program is encouraging the extraordinarily high costs at our colleges and universities now. I think the colleges need to be more responsible and rein in the costs so that it doesn't bankrupt students and their families. But I do not think we should encourage, by loan forgiveness, taking out even more loans.
Susan, thanks for leaving us that voicemail. We also got this message on Facebook from Alan, who says, I think the bigger question is, why does college cost so much in the first place? Other countries have affordable costs for their own citizens and reserve the high prices for foreign students. Danielle, what do you think of that message from Susan and Alan there?
Well, I will say the argument of people being able to work their way through college, it's something that holds weight a generation ago. I don't really feel like you can work a part-time job and pay your way through the average college these days, perhaps community college in a lot of instances, but other than that, not necessarily. And as far as the cost of college, yes, that has to be a part of the conversation about why the cost of delivery is where it is. I will say it's important to note that for public colleges, tuition increases are usually used to offset state disinvestment. So when states don't fund the money, tuition starts to increase. And even though we've seen states come back in terms of their appropriations to public institutions, it's still not, in many states, that is, not where it was pre-recession. And on the private side, there is a kind of an arms race in some respect of private schools trying to attract students who can pay as close to full freight as possible and spending a lot of money on amenities that don't necessarily go towards instruction. And the other issue is administrative bloat. I mean, that can't be discounted in the sense of there are a lot more VPs to the VPs, and all of those sorts of issues become a kind of cost of delivery that is onto students and their families, and that has to be addressed.
We also received this message from Ryan on Facebook who says, by forgive, Biden certainly means pay out taxpayer money. That means the working class gets stuck with the bill. Millions of people who did not go to college because they couldn't afford it and instead went and worked at a trade will be paying the bill for millions of others who agreed to pay the money back that they themselves benefited from. I'm curious, Annie, when we think about this question in the larger context of the economy, is there a cost to this debt to the average American?
So certainly. And I think that there are a number of arguments that you're hearing bubbling up here. So one argument is, hey, I paid my student loan debt. I worked my way through school 30 years ago. This is not fair. Which I think applies to most government spending programs, right? You know, if we had a mortgage program, people would be concerned about that too. Another is the kind of moral hazard argument. So are people going to take out more debt on the expectation of forgiveness? Or perhaps even more pressingly, are schools going to increase the costs through tuition and other fees because they believe that the public will be shouldering that burden more and more often? Another concern is that this is not very good stimulus. So if you compare dollar per dollar loan forgiveness to something like expanding payments through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, that's going to have a much bigger anti-recessionary bang for your buck, though that's very apples and oranges, because this would be really targeted at black-white wealth gaps. And also, again, this is just something that Joe Biden can do unilaterally without Congress, so he doesn't need to get Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema on board with this. But again, it's we haven't seen debt jubilees be part of the arsenal for politicians to help constituents or stimulate the economy before. So we're in somewhat politically unusual territory here.
I'm also curious, though, whether there is a cost for just allowing this debt to continue forward. How do we feel that in the economy?
Oh, goodness. Absolutely. So we know that higher education spending is a great social good. And OECD data indicates that every dollar that we're spending ends up generating $5 in broader economic gains because better educated workers are so much better for the economy, right? It means that people are getting those skills to use their particular skills out in the workforce. And it's been really good to get a much bigger group of students, including those from low-income backgrounds, to go to school. But there's tremendous social cost to the way that we financed this and the kind of experiment we've run in putting $1.6 trillion of debt on people. And we know that it is causing folks to delay marriage, maybe even have fewer children. We know that it's suppressing business formation because people feel so burdened. We know that it means that people are less likely to buy a home. We also know that this has had a tremendous psychological cost. Simply shouldering what often is the equivalent of a second mortgage or a second childcare payment is really hard on people. They really don't like it. They really feel that it's constraining them in some way. And you see that most clearly, I think, with younger folks, with millennials and members of Gen Z.
I'm Jen White. You're listening to 1A. We're talking about student loan forgiveness with Annie Lowry, staff writer at The Atlantic covering economic policy. Also with us, Danielle Douglas Gabriel, reporter for The Washington Post covering the economics of education. Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Sarah Jacobs is an art teacher at a small university in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She has over $140,000 in student loan debt. That's nearly four times the national average. Sarah, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So what do you think about President Biden's plan to forgive up to $10,000 of student loan debt?
I'm glad that people are talking about this, and I really appreciate now that people with student loan debt like me are being considered, because in the past that wasn't the case. And I think certainly Congresswoman Presley's plan would help me a lot more, but even with the $50,000, I would still have $90,000 in debt.
After graduating with your bachelor's degree, you only owed $14,000. But after graduate school, your debt jumped to $140,000, 10 times that amount. How did that happen?
Well, I actually had it down to $12,000 because I worked for a couple of years before going back to grad school, and I was paying it off. And honestly, on paper, the graduate school looked a little bit more expensive per year than my undergrad. And so I kind of anticipated that I would owe, you know, something comparable to what I owed in undergrad, but I wasn't taking into consideration at the time. At 24, I didn't think about the fact that with my undergrad, I had gotten merit scholarships and I had need scholarships. And also there was a parental contribution that my parents worked weekends to, you know, try to meet. And that's why my college loans were, loans were so low after college. And it didn't occur to me that none of that would be factored into my graduate school.
What's been the emotional and psychological impact of carrying this amount of debt?
I really just try not to think about it. It does have an economic impact on me, though. Like, for instance, I make a pretty good salary now, particularly for somebody who works in a nonprofit. And I work in a nonprofit partly because I'm part of the Public Service Loan Forgiveness 10-year plan. But that's a lifeline. But I make $56,000, so I'm not somebody to be pitied, you know, exactly. But I do have to pay about 200 and something a month when, not right now because of the pandemic, but when I'm paying my student loans back based on the pay as you earn. And so if I had an extra few hundred bucks a month, it would make a big difference. And I know that because I haven't been paying it this year because of it being stopped for the pandemic. And I've actually been able to save. And normally I don't save if money. The first 2 years that I was working as a full-time faculty member, I spent that time paying off credit card debt I had gotten from adjuncting for years, and that's another problem. But I had to have an emergency surgery 5 weeks ago, and I actually had the money because this whole year I've been saving, and it was great to know that I could pay for it, because in the past I would have just had to set up a payment plan and I would have been really in debt. I don't want to have children, but I certainly probably wouldn't be able to if I did.
What do you wish people looking at student loan borrowers as irresponsible for not paying what they owe understood about your situation?
Well, I understand the sentiment of the woman who said that she paid off her university. My brother did the same. He only got a bachelor's, and then he lived with like five guys for 10 years and saved and paid back his student loans. But what people don't understand is that it would be completely impossible for someone who owes as much as I do, because I'm spending a few hundred dollars a month paying back, but it doesn't go anywhere near the principal. I'm just paying on interest, and I'll never really get there.
And for someone who said, well, why did you get a graduate degree? Why did you incur that debt? What would you say to them?
I guess I had no idea how much it would cost. Plus, I wouldn't be able to be working in my profession. I couldn't be a professor if I hadn't gotten it.
Beyond the debt forgiveness, is there something else you'd like to see from the Biden administration or other lawmakers to help you and others in your position?
Yeah, actually, I was talking to a friend about how I would be on this program, and he told me that he has $155,000 in debt. And so we were talking about things that would help beyond that. And one of them would be that with this pay as you earn, and I should say that I'm really grateful to President Obama for starting that, because otherwise I would have to pay back thousands of dollars per month that I don't have, and I'd just be kind of ruined. But he started the pay as you earn, where what you pay is based on how much money you make rather than your total debt. And they have you pay back 10% of your discretionary income. I don't know how they determine what that is, because I'm lucky to live in Pittsburgh where rent's not that expensive, but somebody who lived in like the Bay Area, for instance, I don't know. Their 10% discretionary would be very different than somebody who lives somewhere in a rural place, you know, with the same income. But one thing that I think would be helpful would be to lower that to maybe 7%, just ease the burden a little bit. And also the public loan forgiveness program is great, but it's 10 years and it's hard to keep a job in a nonprofit for that long. That it could be helpful to shorten that.
That's Sarah Jacobs. She teaches art at a small university in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Sarah, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you, Jen.
We'll continue our conversation on student loan forgiveness with Annie Lowry. She's a staff writer at The Atlantic, and Danielle Douglas Gabriel, reporter for The Washington Post. And with you, you can tweet us at 1A. I'm Jen White. We'll be back in a moment. Now let's get back to our conversation on student loan forgiveness with Annie Lowry. She's a staff writer at The Atlantic, and Danielle Douglas-Gabriel, a reporter for The Washington Post. We got this question from Carrie on Twitter, who says, how will it be determined who will get the loan forgiveness? If your situation is different than last year's tax filing, how is it taken into account? Annie, how would the student loan forgiveness potentially work?
So I think the best answer is that we are not sure yet, given that members of Congress are pushing quite different solutions to this issue than the Biden administration itself. The Biden administration also is still mulling this over and deciding how they would do it. However, it seems that at the point that they announced the forgiveness, basically there would be a kind of point-in-time assessment at that either $10,000 or perhaps $50,000 level. And then the administration would wipe out, again, just the governmental loans, not private loans at that level. But administratively, how they would actually roll that out, I think that we have some question marks around that at this point.
Well, we also heard from a few of you about how the student loan problem is more than a millennial problem.
Hi, this is Rita in Wisconsin. The school loan problem is actually multi-generational. Our family is working together to keep everyone afloat, and I have a small school loan of $9,000. My husband and I took out a home equity loan to pay off my daughter's $20,000 school loan when she turned 40. All of us are treading water currently.
Hi, this is Lisa from Salt Lake City. Went back to school at 50, to get a graduate degree. If the president could knock off the more the better, because then we can participate more actively in the economy. And for those of us that are older students, you know, it's a hardship, and you want to be able to do good work, but the burden of the loan makes, life much more difficult.
That echoes this email we got from G. David, who says, a decade ago at the age of 40, I was paying off my undergraduate loans. I had around $40,000 left, but I was in a profession that was unstable and insecure, so I decided to return to school to pursue a master's degree. Now my student loan debt is greater than $170,000. I barely survive as a gig worker driving for Lyft. I am 50 years old. If nothing changes, I will be paying my student loans for the rest of my life, never retiring, never purchasing a home, and never achieving my dreams. Danielle, what data do we have about how much parents and older people are impacted by this debt?
Certainly, people age 50 and older are among the fastest growing categories of borrowers holding debt. We're talking at least 3 to 4 million people, if not more. And what's also really discouraging is that the number of people who are having their Social Security benefits garnished to repay that student debt has increased tremendously over the last few decades. Some of this is Parent PLUS loans, the loans that parents take to help their children attend colleges. But a lot of this is actually adults' own debt. A lot of it, again, was taken during the Great Recession as people started to return to college to upskill to make themselves more marketable.
And Annie, do we know if student loans taken out by parents on behalf of their children would be covered by this loan forgiveness program, whatever shape it takes?
Yeah, again, I think that we're unsure about that just because we don't have the details of the proposal yet. But I would note that there's a lot of interest in this category, given that these are folks who really might be distressed. And again, for people who come from wealthier families, parents essentially act as the student loan borrower, right? Like they pay that debt off if you're from a higher income family. And this is part of the reason that student loan debt has really driven a wedge in the black-white wealth gap.
We got this message from Joel on Facebook who says, I sold my house and used the profits to pay off my federal student loans. I still have private loans, which I doubt will be addressed by any forgiveness. Yet I still support some sort of forgiveness for others. I just don't think Americans should think this will solve anything. It's a Band-Aid. It does not solve the problem. Don't get bought off. Demand change. I'm curious to hear from you, Annie, about this distinction between the federal student loan debt and private loans. What are we seeing on the private loan side?
Yeah, so you know the private loans, the sum of the debt is much smaller. It's roughly $150 billion versus $1.6 trillion, but the interest rates tend to be higher. The issue there, I think, is not that people don't think that those debts are problematic, and not that they don't think that those are difficult for pay. The issue is that you would need a bill coming through Congress to address that debt, whereas Joe Biden could unilaterally address the federal student loan debt. But it's a major problem. And notably, when we think about those kind of structural fixes for this issue going forward, because a one-time debt jubilee is not going to fix the problem 30 years in the future, that's where I think that conversation about those private loans come in. Do we want to make it so that people don't need to take those private loans? Are we going to start thinking about increasing public financing for college degrees? Are we going to start thinking about things like price controls? Is the government going to have to do something much bigger and more structural and thornier to address this issue? Given, I think, as the callers have shown, there's a tremendous social cost, and people are not able to capture the benefit of going to school in the way that they were promised and that they thought would happen.
Well, Danielle, as we heard in that voicemail from Rita, they said that the student loan problem is a multi-generational one, which also speaks, as we've said, to the issue of family wealth creation for students of color, whose student loan debt might make that even more out of reach. Give us a better understanding of how fixing the problems in higher education and the cost associated with it could be a way to close the racial wealth gap.
Certainly, because borrowers of color, and specifically Black people who are attending college at this stage, are borrowing more money and more often than their white peers and taking on that debt, not only for undergraduate degrees, but for graduate degrees. And, you know, I think it's important to note within this conversation that, you know, there's less, sympathy for folks who have graduate degrees. But in many professions, that advanced degree is necessary in order to keep your job or to advance or to get a promotion. I'm thinking social workers, teachers, and others. And so having that debt, especially in fields where you're not getting the payoff in terms of your salary, but still holding that debt. And this is happening at a time where a lot fewer states offer the sorts of incentive forgiveness programs that became popular within the last couple of years or so. These students, these teachers, these social workers and others are oftentimes taking on money that they'll never be able to repay. And when you think about why that they have to take on this debt in the first place, well, we understand that racial inequalities within the labor market, historic public policy discrimination in the housing market have created a situation where Black families just don't have the sorts of resources to make it easy for them not to have to take on debt in the same way that others would. So those have to be a part of the conversation and consideration. You're seeing more of that conversation happening, but not always when people are thinking about the nuance and complexity of who holds debt and what it means for their generational wealth creation ability.
At the same time, we're seeing from the Biden administration and other economists, they say that actually the place to invest is early childhood education, that's where we're going to see the best return for our dollar. What do you make of that argument?
So I guess it depends if you feel like there has to be a trade-off, but there is something to be said about being able to do both. This conversations about student debt cancellation are not happening in a vacuum in the sense that there are other policies that the federal government is entertaining and the Biden administration is entertaining in order to address the cost of education from pre-K all the way through higher ed. And not just when I say cost, meaning issues of equity, issues of access that run throughout. And it doesn't, I guess there is a troubling sense of folks thinking, well, if we do this, we can't do that. But perhaps there needs to be a more holistic approach to this that address the problems throughout the system from the beginning to the end, rather than just waiting for us to get into another set of trillion-dollar debt.
Annie, your thoughts?
Yeah. So again, this goes back to the way in which student loan debt cancellation or the debt jubilee, on the one hand, would benefit higher income folks and families more. It's regressive in that sense, but it could be a really powerful tool for racial equity. And so some of the simulations I've been looking at show that $50,000 in loan forgiveness would increase the wealth held by Black families by 40%. It would really dramatically affect the Black-white wealth gap, which has been enormously persistent. And I'd just like to echo what Danielle said, which is that we know that we need much more investment in young children, perhaps through things like universal pre-K or Senator Romney's child allowance plan, because we have rates of child poverty that are 2, 3, even 4 times higher than our OECD peers. But this is another...
Annie, we're losing you there.
This is another structural problem where I think that thinking of these things as an either or, as opposed to both being a really, really important part of setting us up for a healthier and more economically thriving population down the road.
I'm Jen White. You're listening to 1A. We're talking about student loan forgiveness with Annie Lowry. She's a staff writer at The Atlantic. Also with us is Danielle Douglas-Gabriel. She's a reporter for The Washington Post. Danielle, talk about this shift in higher education being seen as a public good to an individual one and how that plays into how we think about student loan debt.
I think it's an important part of how we think about student loan debt. I mean, we saw some of this bubbling up in the 70s and such in California when Reagan was governor, and just kind of shifting the idea of the public good towards the individual good. And certainly that kind of thinking and ideology continued into the federal space in the 80s. And there was almost a welcoming path for states to disinvest from their higher institutions of higher education. And in part also, you know, when states are in a position of economic distress, higher ed is an easy target because you can increase tuition in order to offset the appropriations from the state legislatures. And that is what we saw for the last several decades. The trouble with this also is that it seems, you know, and there are many scholars who have looked at this, that people became more comfortable with the idea of the state not investing as much within their public institutions when the population of college-going students changed in terms of the racial composition as well as the income composition. And that became kind of a troubling trend that we saw more as more low-income, Black, Latinx, Indigenous folks come into this system in order to buy into the American dream the way that the messaging has told them that they need to. The dollars did not necessarily follow from the state, and in some extent from the federal government as well, because you think about the purchasing power of Pell. It has not been indexed to inflation. It has not increased at the rate to which would allow that program to be useful to students. So I think it's really important to have conversations now about doubling the Pell Grant, which would bring it to closer to $13,000 a year, which would be extremely helpful for students from lower income families.
We got this tweet from Gabrielle who says, my generation was told repeatedly we wouldn't be anything if we didn't have a degree. So we did as we were told. And now we're left holding the bag with few jobs available. We got a lot of messages about interest rates. And Annie, has President Biden said anything about plans to tackle high interest rates on student loans?
Yeah, so there have been a number of proposals that have come out that would. So first of all, I would note that right now he's continued the Trump administration's proposal of suspending student loan payments, and I think that there have been some proposals that have thought about helping to tackle interest rates, either bring those down or affect income accruals on student loan borrowing. But right now, most of the debate is about this actual forgiveness of this overall amount.
Danielle, student loan forgiveness isn't the only plan Biden has to address college debt and affordability. He's also talked about community college. What else have we heard from him about addressing this issue?
So tuition-free college, public college, is something that the Biden administration had supported on the campaign trail. That would be inclusive of community college as well as public four-year institutions. It would also lower the cost of historically black institutions, minority-serving institutions. So that's one end. The other one, which has broad support within higher education and on Capitol Hill, would be doubling the Pell Grant for students from lower-income families. Pell Grant's roughly about $6,500 right now. Doubling that would certainly knock out a lot of the cost of attendance for community colleges in particular, but also certainly lower the cost of attendance for a lot of public regional colleges and help with private institutions as well. The other thing that the Biden administration is looking at is reforming some of the existing programs that offer some level of debt forgiveness. And we're talking public service loan forgiveness. What the art teacher that we spoke to earlier was on, right now people have to wait 10 years. He's proposing that they should pay no more than 5% of their discretionary income for 20 years that's for the public service loan, for the income-based repayment program. But for public service loan, you get $10,000 of debt cancellation every year of public service for up to 5 years, which would be tremendously helpful for a large part of the population.
That's Danielle Douglas-Gabriel. She's a reporter for The Washington Post covering the economics of education. Also with us today, Annie Lowry, a staff writer at The Atlantic covering economic policy. Annie, Danielle, thanks for your time. We are on Instagram. You can follow us at The 1A Show. Today's producer was Haley Blassingame. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk more soon. This is 1A.